All right, ladies and gentlemen around the Delaware Valley, welcome to the Reboot Radio Hour with Steve-O. This is Joe Dockett, your co-host. Fantastic broadcast coming your way. Got an awesome guest, no stranger to the broadcast, even though it's been a while. John Pallante, the law offices of John Pallante, is our guest today. John, how are you, sir?
Good. Pretty good.
Pretty good. Well, he's a Phillies fan, so you can see where he's coming from. And Steve-O said to us that I would talk to, gave us a little bit of a go-ahead that we can talk a little Phillies baseball before we get into the business of medicine and law. Shout out to TJ and the producer's booth. Reboot does all kinds of incredible stuff with therapy and chiropractic, physical therapy, but also, and we'll get into this, you have a lot of different techniques that have to do with stress and all those things. A lot of, and today would be a good day for the entire city to make an appointment at Reboot IWC before the game. Hopefully not as necessary after the game, but man, you know, we're on the doorstep here, and so it's a stressful day, and hopefully Ranger Suarez, can turn it around. Thoughts, John?
Well, we got the talent, we got the team. Let's hope they show up. I mean, Ranger's going to have to, put together a good outing for us to have a chance. But you know what? I think we still have life.
Yeah, I think we need to just relax. Obviously, it's difficult after game one and game three. Game two was that was a nice treat for us to be able to come on top when we were biting our nails.
That's right, come from behind, right? Yeah.
But I do feel like today is virtually a game five, essentially, because I think if we can just pull this one out anyway, how we come back here, and Wheeler's going to line up.
And you got Wheeler lined up. Now, we all know that baseball gods are and this has been, when I look at this and you look at even the moves, keep this in mind. For us at this table, whether we like it or not, nothing else is going to do but winning that last game. The truth. Whether we lose tonight or lose in the seventh game of the World Series, the only thing acceptable to us is because we've been to the mountain, right to the tip, we were a couple outs away against Houston, and we lost. So we're here to win it all. The Mets, on the other hand, have already won. They've had a couple horrible years, and they want to win the World Series like we all do. But the fact is that they win this series or just get to the next year. They've already, so they're making moves right now, like bringing a reliever in, okay, in the seventh inning, their closer, because they're not looking for now. Everybody, you mentioned Wheeler, okay, Steve? Well, the whole world, okay, who wasn't paying attention to the pitch count, is sitting here going, we should have kept him in. He thrown 111 pitches.
No, the bullpen had to do their job at that point.
And they didn't. That's right.
Yeah. I mean, you got to think ahead, too. I mean, he's going to have to pitch at some point again. You don't want to exhaust him.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
And ultimately, the bullpen's been great all year. Yeah. And they just, for some reason, haven't showed up.
The
Mets are pretty hot. But back to your point about, we got to win it all. Yeah, it's true. We do. But losing to the Mets will hurt.
It will hurt, man.
But let's not do it.
No. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I totally agree. No, I agree with you. But you got Topper. And he's making a decision, especially with Wheeler. Now, what's confusing, that he knows he's got to throw him for two more series. It matters not if we win that game, if the guy is a mess in the next series. And right now, so he did what he had to do. But what was weird was yesterday when he brought in Estevez in the eighth. Down 4-0, okay, and he must have thrown 36 pitches. What are we going to do today? Can the guy even pitch? And we have to win today.
Mm-hmm.
That was weird.
I think what makes most people anxious at this point is how Ranger's been pitching over the past several starts. He hasn't been himself. I mean, we were hoping that the Ranger of the first half of the season would make an appearance at some point, and I'm hoping and crossing my fingers that happens today.
Well, even if he only lasts a couple innings.
Give us 4 or 5.
You know,
maybe one or two runs, tops three, I'd be happy. Because ultimately, the offense has to deliver. I mean, you can't come into a series and only score one or two runs
and they have
a game.
They have to, you know, they take the count. They have to take some pitches. They've been swinging, it seems like.
Well, baseball is so mental, okay? I was talking about it earlier today. I mean, just all week. I mean, the fact of the matter is that you're either relaxed and, you know, playing jiggly or you're uptight. You're pitching, you're hitting the same, you're the same, you're dealing with the same pitcher. You're batting against the same pitcher, and your mindset is everything. So if you're down 5-0, now all of a sudden you're pressing. You're in a groove and everybody's hitting.
Who's pitching for the Mets tonight?
I don't know. Who is?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this isn't sports radio, so you know, you can't hold
it. We can look it up real quick, but it doesn't matter. I mean, whoever it is.
So bring back Nolan Ryan in his prime.
we need to make sure that, you know, when you have a rally going like they did yesterday, where you had two men on, no outs, and Harper comes up, you got to deliver. Yeah. Give me something. Well, move the runners at least.
I know.
You know?
I mean, but and it's hard because Harper always does deliver. Yes. And he throws him three pitches, 77, 85, 83 miles an hour, breaking pitches and change-ups. And that guy, you know, he was a nightmare yesterday, that starting pitcher. But he can't pitch every day.
Yeah. I'm confident that Harper is going to take the right approach. But some of the other guys, and I'm confident Schwarber is going to do a good job, but we need contributions.
Oh my God!
From some of the other guys.
It's such a short series, though. I mean, think about it. You how many times throughout the year, whoever the MVP has ever been, were three straight games, you know, in a 5-game period, you know, they go into a little slump. In baseball, in the playoffs, the marathon in the regular season, the sprint. That's you're out of there. And so look at Aaron Judge. I mean, Aaron Judge had one of the most historic, years in the history of baseball. But right, you know, if the team isn't on it's on all cylinders.
Did the Yankees lose?
No, well, they're down, I believe, 2-1. No one's out of it yet.
Well, that's good.
You know,
so. It's 1-1. Wait,
it was 1-1.
It might be 1-1.
It's 1-1.
Okay,
it was
1-1. Point that
okay.
Okay, but still, what I'm saying is that he went 0-4 and 1-3. Right? Now, who cares? Right? But now the ghost of Reggie Jackson is over Yankee Stadium at all times. Right? And. You know, so or you got Reggie Jackson and then Dave Winfield, I forget what he called that. What George Steinbrenner called Dave Winfield, Mr. May, something like that, because they used to call Reggie Jackson Mr. October. So
that's not a name you want.
Yeah,
you want to. That's you want to avoid that one.
But anyway, listen, I'm representing. I got my hat on today, and you know, John Pallante noticed that. And I said to my wife, I'm gonna, because she's a diehard fan. I mean, we all are diehard fans, but I got to tell her, before we go on to this, and you're a medical professional, last year, things were going so topsy-turvy. There was at one point in the playoffs, in the championship series, that her blood pressure was so high. I'm going, you know, listen, I want to win this, but I'm not kidding you. And she's got blood pressure, so I'm going, she's not going to make it. So when they lost, I had to look at the positive and the negative. You know, I mean, really, I want to be honest. Let's look at it. Okay, the Phillies lose, but I have my wife. Or they win, but it takes long. She has a stroke and she's out, and that's. But then I get the insurance money. So it's there's a lot going on.
I see where your mind is at. Oh.
She might not be listening.
Goodness,
so. Anyway, listen, we got a great show. If you would, Steve-O, introduce our guest real.
Let's give John a proper introduction. So we have Mr. John Pallante. He's a Philadelphia-based attorney with an abundant amount of experience representing injured workers as well as personal injury clients involved in motor vehicle accidents, slip and falls, as well as individuals in civil litigation. He's got a vast exposure with insurance companies which has provided him with invaluable insight that have helped achieve tremendous outcome for his clients over the years beyond their satisfaction. John is very local, obtained his undergraduate degree from Misericordia.
Yes.
As well as earned his graduate degree in law from Catholic University down at D.C.
Right? I did not know that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Nice.
He's very much a family man, loves to focus his life outside the firm with his spending quality time with his family. And in addition, and this piqued my interest, John, is that you are a black belt in judo as well as, is it a brown belt in jiu-jitsu?
Yes.
Okay. Which is near and dear to me because I'm a huge fan of mixed martial arts. The whole UFC brand, the Ultimate Fighting Championship sporting venue has really superseded many of my sports passions now. I mean, before it was baseball, the NFL, but the UFC is pretty much on par with them now. It's I believe it's a just a great brand. They deliver a tremendous product now. I mean, just some amazing fighters, and we can talk about that eventually. Because it truly is a passion.
I'm glad you reminded me because I'm not going to be disagreeing with John too. The answer is you're right.
Yeah, he's
right. No, you're 100%.
He'll strangle you either.
But take me down.
Mm-hmm. You better tap quick.
I'm tapping now.
But thank you so much, John, for coming here in studio, live here in studio. We really appreciate having you. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Awesome.
John, if you would, remind our listeners a little bit about yourself and the firm.
Say again?
Remind our listeners a little bit about yourself and the firm.
Well, I mean, pretty much said it all. I've been practicing, I guess it's over 30 years now. That's kind of strikes me as crazy when I say it. But I've been representing injured workers and plaintiffs in Philadelphia for all that time. Actually started doing defense work for maybe the first 5-6 years.
Which a lot of people do.
Yeah, a lot of people do. And then I my own practice at a relatively young age, and it was like, probably one of the best moves I did, and I've been fortunate to have a lot of excellent clients and representing people that appreciate my representation, and it's been a very rewarding career.
Now, going into law, did you know that pretty early on in your young life, or was there family members or other influences that kind of geared you toward that direction?
No, well, both my parents had doctorates in education. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were successful, but
professionals.
So mm-hmm. we were expected to kind of, you know, get to that level kind of thing.
Did you go to high school, by the way?
I started off in South Jersey, but then my parents moved up to upstate Pennsylvania. It was a little school in Luzerne County.
What school?
Middle of nowhere. It's called Lake Lehman. You ever hear of it?
Oh, yeah.
No. Yeah.
It's like up toward the Poconos, I imagine?
It's beyond the Poconos. Okay. It's called the Back Mountain because it's called the Back Mountain.
How many students?
Oh, it was small.
Really?
I mean, it was a little bit of a culture shock coming from New Jersey going all the way up there where, you know, everybody hunted. They had day off for the first day
it's
of
pretty
deer
cool,
season.
Though. It's really cool.
You know? And, you know, sometimes some of the kids smelled like, I didn't know what it was. But
the farm?
Well, it was trapping. They would go trapping in the morning, and they would use the urine of the animals.
Mm. Oh, my God.
That is a culture shock.
By the way, do you still stay in touch with anybody up there?
Well, actually, my wife, I unfortunately got a divorce at some point, but we're still friends. And, you know, we have 3 children. Okay. But she's from up there.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Any classmates you keep? I mean, probably still no sign.
Well, yeah, I mean, they get me on Facebook and you know stuff like that. So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What year did you graduate?
84.
Oh man, you're only a couple years behind me.
Yeah.
I was 82.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So. Wow. You know, it is amazing.
Oh,
I get more
good wrestling school.
Later. Really?
Yeah. Mm. It was good wrestling. The couple years before I got there, they had 3 state champs, which is you know in one year. So
by the way, wrestling is a man's sport, and what I mean by that is I'm not saying it's not a woman's sport, but I'm just saying compared to football practice, wrestling is 100 times.
It's really, I mean, if you know, it's
what the sheer cutting of weight is just ridiculous.
You know what, my kids wrestle too, and they kind of are, I think, a little better about it nowadays. Like they make you weigh in before and they don't let you lose as much weight. Back in the day, nobody was conscious of.
But I'm talking about the run-of-the-mill standard wrestling practice makes football practice.
Oh, it's oh my. It's grueling.
It's
well,
crazy.
Speaking of the UFC, a lot of the best fighters have a wrestling foundation.
Yes.
And you can understand why, not only because of the strength and conditioning, but the mental fortitude that they have
is
above and beyond.
I mean, if a wrestler comes into our jiu-jitsu gym.
You can see.
Well, I mean, they're tough, definitely. But if they don't have any jiu-jitsu, usually you can, you know, you let them go, and they exert all their energy, and you know, usually you know, you can come out on top because you're not exerting as much energy kind of thing. Yeah. And you know the tricks, but once they learn the tricks, they're killers kind of thing. So,
Wow. Yeah. How long have you been doing jiu-jitsu?
A long time. I started judo in 07.
Wow.
And then I switched over to jiu-jitsu, you know, still doing judo too, about since 12.
Wow.
2012, yeah.
That's now, is judo a pretty foundational skill set that a lot of UFC fighters utilize? I mean, because I know the throwing techniques can be helpful, but it doesn't seem like you're not focused too much on it.
Judo and jiu-jitsu are, you know, half brother and sister, so to speak, or, you know, very related. In other words, judo came from Japanese jiu-jitsu.
Right, right.
And then jiu-jitsu came from judo.
Right.
There was a guy from Japan that went down. His name is, I think it's Maeda is his name. Hmm. And he traveled the world trying to demonstrate the superiority of judo. But back then, they didn't have as many rules. You know, modern judo has certain rules and regulations where they limit certain things because they don't want you to get hurt kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just, they have certain rules that jiu-jitsu doesn't have. The guy Maeda went down to Brazil and eventually he's the one that taught.
Most people think of jiu-jitsu as Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Right.
Without realizing there is an origin to
The family?
Gracie.
Gracie's. Yeah, my brother got heavily involved in Gracie jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm currently at Gracie Humada, which is down in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, he got to know one of the Gracies. I mean, I think they took trips down there. There's a couple guys, and the two brothers in Philly that are...
Oh, the Miller Gracies.
No, I'm talking, not them, but they're friends with the Gracies.
Oh, yeah.
Two brothers that are, that are heavily involved, that they have an academy, I believe in South Philly, that they teach.
Okay.
You probably know them.
I probably know them.
Yeah, you know, they're heavily involved in it, and so they brought up that type of style to the United States.
Yeah, So modern judo, I think, is, I mean, it's a great sport. I mean, I like watching it. I enjoy watching it. Mm-hmm. But it's most of the guys in the UFC, it's rare to get a judo guy. I mean, you get some, definitely. Mm-hmm. But
I could see its practicality.
Yeah.
I mean, when you get into a grappling match, I mean, there's certain throws that you would want to know.
I think in terms of actual self-defense, that's the guy that was the founder of judo, his name is Kano. He was a student of Japanese jiu-jitsu, and he's the one that kind of created judo. And the first thing that he implemented was throwing techniques. Mm-hmm. And it was only later that he brought in the groundwork techniques that we do a lot in jiu-jitsu kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because his belief was it's better for self-defense, the throwing techniques kind of thing. A smaller person. And it is true that I think judo, you see judo a lot in films like John Wick and stuff like that. When he's doing his fights.
Yep.
That's a lot of judo. True. Judo works when somebody's coming at you aggressively.
Right.
But if two people are being defensive, it's not as effective.
Right. Right. Well, that's why they call it mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
Is that a certain, you know, phase of the combat, you know, you're implementing other forms of technique.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of great fighters that are coming out of, I'm sorry, we're actually geeking out
no,
on this
because,
again, it is a huge, huge passion of mine. And I'm a casual, like, you know.
I wish it wasn't all pay per view though. It was. I used to watch it a lot more when you could just watch it. Now don't you have to? Do you have to buy it or something?
Well,
like that?
You'll get the ESPN Plus Fight Pass on most weekends.
Okay.
But a lot of it is pay per view, especially the main cards or the main events. You know, this one upcoming at the end of the month, UFC 307, I believe. I mean, it is just a fantastic main event that I am hugely looking forward to, and that's Ilia Topuria and Max Holloway, which to me, take a coin flip of who's going to win that fight. They're two killers.
I mean, I think it's a interesting, I mean, I enjoy watching it too, but it is brutal though. It is brutal.
Oh, it's brutal. Yeah. I'll talk to certain family members who aren't so attuned to it, and they're like, this isn't a sport. This is like Gladiator. And I'm like, no. If you really understand the sport and how, you know, the fight camps that they go to and just how scientific now everything's been.
The skill and training is great, but
top notch.
Man, it is brutal.
Phil Miglerice.
Yeah.
You know Phil?
Yeah.
And his brother?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they were, my brother used to train with them. And,
yeah, that's
and,
that's what I was saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So now they're in my, he's in my phone because he's friends with a lot of union guys, and he's done some work. They do, I think, a lot of graphics work. Or, but they,
yeah, that's called Balance Studios. They
have,
they're very big, and they're very good, excellent, you know, place to study jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have any UFC fighters come through your gym?
Oh, yeah. My gym, I don't remember, but definitely
their
gym. Yeah,
because there's a few fighters that are under contract with the, like Joe Pfeiffer, he's a big name. Sean Brady, of course, we had that one. It was the Irish Dragon. Do you know? I forget his name. He's a commentator on the UFC, but probably one of the more well-known fighters around this area.
We had the kid from, what was it, North Catholic or something like
oh,
that?
Oh, yeah, that's right, Eddie Alvarez.
Yeah, yeah.
Who of, yeah, he's probably the best since he was a middleweight, no, a lightweight champ. You know, I remember that Conor McGregor fight he had, which didn't really pan out the way we wanted because I was rooting for him, local guy. But yeah,
you know,
and a wrestler.
You know, mm-hmm. But yeah, wrestling is great. And mm-hmm. in terms of if you look over the history of UFC, I think in the beginning, obviously, it was the jiu-jitsu guys, the Brazilian jiu-jitsu guys who were dominating. And they still, I mean, I have
true.
To say it's great.
Yeah.
But I think since then, I do believe it's D1 wrestlers that had probably the most
success.
I would say overall. Yeah. I mean, although, and there's various types of wrestling too, because, you know, those, the Khabibs of the world coming out of Dagestanian wrestling, the Sambo wrestling, you know, that, you know, so you got very variety of, you know, freestyle wrestling and, you know, college wrestling. But that is a great foundation. Preference for me is more of the strikers. I always enjoy a good striking match, you know, which nowadays they've actually emerged as much more competitive now because of their defensive strategy of
definitely.
The takedown.
You can keep a grappler at bay. That's you know, if you could do that,
with
you
distance,
can win the match.
That's right.
And of course, you could knock them out too.
What? You know, I mean, I like watching. But I was a massive boxing fan growing up, and so. You know, like, I mean, the golden years. I still remember when Joe, so there was one guy in my life, only one, it sounds crazy, that I never got the chance to meet and I always would have loved to, and that was Joe Frazier, if you can believe
it. Oh, I met him.
Yeah, I mean, so many people.
I met him.
By the way, so many people.
What year was that?
It's been a while. Was that a jazz? What was that jazz place downtown? Do they still have that?
The cafe?
Zanzibar Blue?
Zanzibar Blue.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember Zanzibar Blue.
Yeah.
I never got a chance to meet him, but I still remember the day. I remember coming in my dad's bedroom in the morning when he was getting ready for work, the night Joe Frazier fought George Foreman. I was too young to stay up. My dad went to closed circuit TV. That's when they used to do that. And man, I still remember being devastated. Mm. But and I remember, obviously, Ali and Frazier. And I you know, so being a Philly guy, that was the golden era of heavyweights. I mean, Frazier, Foreman, Norton, Ron Lyle, you know, I mean, just
speaking
Muhammad
of,
Ali,
speaking
of
boxing, I'm related to the middleweight champion of the world from 1930, Freddie Apostoli.
Get the hell out of here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
what did you do, one of those family lineage?
My... People, you know, he's a close relative.
Oh,
yeah.
So that was
that's my mom's family's name.
Wow.
You know who they say, and this is a not well known, but probably the toughest guy in the history of Philadelphia, that Joe Dougherty. He is unbelievable.
He's undefeated.
He's undefeated in his own mind, anyway. Right?
Yeah.
But no, it's incredible. Philadelphia is such a great city. I used to hear. Okay, about the Blue Horizon, right?
Oh, yeah. Didn't you ever go there?
I did.
It was fun.
I heard it. But yeah. And you know Caitlin Files?
No.
Okay, she does a show with us, right? And she's a work comp attorney from Bucks County. And we had Tim Witherspoon on her show in the middle of a boxing ring that Tim's son, he owns the gym.
Is he local, Tim?
Tim Witherspoon is the only heavyweight champion in the history of Philadelphia that was actually
born
in Philadelphia. Wow. He was up at the coolest guy ever. Like, I mean, and by the way, this was like 8 months ago, and he called into her show last month. Okay. What a cool guy. So I'm a boxing historian, but the thing about the Ultimate Fighting that I love watching it when I get time, but I don't, it's so new that I don't know the history of it, and it's so hard for me to, in a sense, you know, follow somebody.
Joe, I got some homework for you to do.
Okay, I'm in.
This, I mentioned this upcoming next pay-per-view event, the main event card, you probably have the two most premier boxers in the UFC. They have to be in the top five. I mean, you have this guy, Ilia Topuria, from Spain and Georgia. He's got two nationalities. And Max Holloway, who's American from Hawaii. And they are considered probably, especially this guy, Ilia. He's got the crispest, just amazing, right. Amazing hands.
I had, when I owned a nightclub, I had the guy who came in. He was one of the big heavyweights. He had a mohawk. A real popular.
Oh, Brock. Not Brock.
Not
Brock. The Iceman?
I would remember him in a second if you said his name. But he was, you know, one of the all-timers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he was at the beginning. So I remember he came to, he was part of a promotion or something.
What's the Iceman's name?
I'm trying to look him up right now.
Oh, God.
He was great.
Oh, he was awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, somebody will remember before this. But I wonder one thing. Are these guys able to make a good living at it? In other words,
it's getting better.
When you look at the old time boxers,
it's getting better.
Even jiu-jitsu is starting to make money.
Well, that's good.
For the top.
Yeah, you got to be a premier.
No question. But I wonder, because you see guys going for a championship at the 5 to 7, 8, 10 fights. But I remember, you look at the old days like Joe Lewis and a lot of those guys, and they got ripped off so bad. It reminds me of the music business, right? Where. Yes, that's him. Who was it?
Chuck Liddell.
Chuck Liddell. Yeah. But it reminds me of the old music business when you got, you know, you have all those stars that they give accolades to. Like, you know, you can go all the way back to a lot of those blues artists. What was his name? Muddy Waters or Bob, whatever. The point is, I'm going way back, right? God knows they got ripped off. Like there's no.
Oh yes. Oh yes.
I hope that these people in this new developing sport are making the money that they should, because
long can you last in that sport?
Exactly.
That's the difficulty. Yeah. You know. I mean, maybe you coach towards the tail end of your career and then kind of set off in sunset that way. But
I hope that. And by the way, speaking of lawyers and all that, I mean, hopefully they're represented well. Let's do this. Real quick, if you would, Steve, a little bit about Reboot yourself and what you guys do.
Mm-hmm. So Reboot is a multidisciplinary outpatient rehab organization. We provide a variety of services and that include acupuncture, chiropractic, physical therapy. That way we are able to enhance and integrate a variety of disciplines from the rehab world to optimize patient outcome. We have a variety of offices located throughout the greater Philadelphia area. One, as I discussed with you, John, in Chinatown, so Center City. One in Elkins Park in Cheltenham area. And then our new location in the Northeast, in the Mayfair area. So that way we can kind of broaden our reach. And, it's been a great journey.
So having said that, the types of, individuals, in other words, when it comes to injury victims, when it comes to workers' compensation patients, and other insurances, talk about that and the services you provide for them and de-treat them.
Yep. So we have a wide spectrum of patient populations. We have a good chunk of our patient population coming from post-op, those that are total NIPS, hips and knees and joint replacements. We service a lot of the senior population, so a lot of geriatric community, and do good work with them and for things like fall prevention and chronic pain management. Of course, we treat a lot of athletes as well, and of course a good chunk, probably about a third of our patient population is through personal injury. Those that are coming for car accident injuries from car accidents. Injuries at work, maybe a slip and fall injury. We're pretty eclectic in who we service. In terms of insurance, we accept all the major commercial insurance carriers from Aetna to Cigna, all the Medicare products and Medicaid advantages. If they are in a personal injury case, we'll take on a lot of the auto claims and the PIP, the personal injury
protection
funds. But the great news is since we are in network with all these insurances, after their funds are exhausted through their auto claim, we can just piggyback right into their health insurance, and that way we're really not touching any settlement claims for the most part.
Can I ask you a question about your practice?
Sure.
You're a physical therapist?
Yes.
And you mentioned acupuncture?
Yes.
Another, was that a separate license?
It's a separate license. Just real briefly, it's you'll need your undergraduate degree and a graduate degree, so it's not just a certification. In Pennsylvania, you have to have an accredited university substantiating that license.
I've personally had acupuncture treatment, and I did like it
because
I had a cervical disc herniation and a numbness in my pinky, which incidentally never went totally away, which is unfortunate. Happened in jiu-jitsu.
I was going to say probably went right.
Exactly. But anyway, but the other question I was going to have is, what do you think about dry needling? I know that's kind of like moving into, that type of.
So that's a very specific approach in acupuncture specifically. But so technically in the state of Pennsylvania, a physical therapist isn't allowed to do dry needling. My recommendation whenever someone approaches me is I recommend that whenever you're seeking a practitioner that is doing dry needling, the best approach is having that practitioner actually have an acupuncture license, because it's that individual that has the extensive amount of education and clinical work versus someone that maybe takes like a 5-week course dry needling.
I know that the level of training isn't as much, but I can say that I've some of the jiu-jitsu athletes do go for dry needling because they consider it helps relieve certain types of
What is dry needling, if you don't want me asking?
Yeah, so it's I mean, what most people think of dry needling is, you know, essentially a needle going into a very specific tight muscle band. And it's a strategy and technique that acupuncturists and those that are certified as well, you know, you'll have some physicians and chiropractors and PTs from out of state that actually practice dry needling. So you ever get a massage?
Yeah.
Okay. So whenever a massage therapist kind of touches an area that's hypersensitive, that's really tight, they call it muscle knots colloquially, that's the area that the needle oftentimes will go into to help release.
It hurts.
It does, but it feels good at the end.
Oh,
I mean, it helps release that muscle tension, what we call it a fasciculation. That's the essentially what you're looking for that release to occur. And what that does is improve tissue perfusion, blood flow to that area, help enhance the healing process and improve range of motion, decrease pain. So that's primarily what a lot of athletes will utilize that for is to just get into
those muscle
areas.
Are they covered by insurance?
Depends. Depends. Now, if you're an acupuncturist, it's probably much more feasible to have it covered under insurance. If you're a physician, you know, they have probably different codes that they can implement to have it covered. But going to an acupuncturist, I think, is a good golden rule.
Are you going to incorporate that into your practice just out of curiosity?
We already do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So oftentimes, let's just say if it's a injured client in an auto vehicle accident or at work or just even through chronic pain, that's one of the approaches that I would implement, including different other points of the body to help enhance the healing.
Now, it's my understanding that, you know, the needle with acupuncture is a finer, smaller needle. Is it a bigger needle with dry needling?
Nope, it's pretty much the same. I mean, you might have a wider diameter, depending upon what body part you're going into, or maybe different constitutionally. You might be just a thicker guy versus someone that might be a little more or less soft tissue, less lean body mass. So you may need a thicker needle just to get into the soft tissue and help release that the muscle knot or the trigger point.
Yeah. John, in your practice, let's touch on personal injury.
Okay.
What are the people? Tell our listeners a little bit about at your personal injury. Okay, I know you do some work comp too, right?
Yes.
Okay, but let's talk about the wide array. What entails personal injury. There's a lot of different.
That's a huge.
So what are your area typically when it comes to personal injury? What are the majority of the people that you see?
I'd say the majority are auto accidents. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you know, premises liability. Just recently, I had two women in, I think it might have been, was it South Philly? But they tripped over, it was 11th and Washington. And I thought, I was trying to figure out what it was, but it was, you know, it was a crack that wasn't fixed and it was significantly elevated. And the lady broke her orbital bone and all sorts of stuff.
God.
Yeah. So that's, a...
those are the areas.
It varies. I mean, sometimes you get construction workers who are maybe cleaning up and they fall through a hole or whatever that, you know, somebody didn't adequately protect. I mean, you know, the cases vary.
When somebody comes in your office, okay, because you may have listeners right now sitting there going, well, I can't afford this guy or whatever. But talk about, is there out-of-pocket costs or you know, what's that situation?
Well, the way we do it in personal injury is, or at least the way I do it, and most, I think most attorneys do it this way, is we call it contingent fee.
Yeah.
Where we, you know, have our meeting. They don't have to really pay us to call us up and, you know, talk about what their case is. I'll take the call. I try to take the call no matter what. Try to, you know, kind of karma thing, you know, talk it through with the people. Even if I'm not going to take the case, maybe I'll talk to them about it and tell them what my thoughts are, what they could possibly do. But the contingent fee is a percentage of the gross recovery. And typically, a personal injury attorney, if there's going to be cost associated with prosecuting the claim, and, you know, usually it is, usually the attorney will front the cost and get it back out of the recovery that they're able to obtain.
So there's no out-of-pocket cost for either a consultation or really the entire process?
That's correct.
Okay, and that's important because people don't always...
Where is your practice, by the way?
16th and Walnut, 1520.
Okay, so you
Walnut.
Are in Center City.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you can represent.
Now it's easy because, you know, we do so many things.
Zoom?
Remotely.
I guess the pandemic must have changed everything.
Well, yeah. I mean, somewhat for the better. I mean, we used to have to travel for meaningless hearings. Meaningless, that's not right.
Unnecessary.
Well, maybe not even unnecessary, but you wouldn't have to show up. You can do it by Zoom just as easily, and it's way better. I mean, why be so inefficient, you know, traveling all these places all over the place for just a two-minute hearing, you know, kind of thing. So now we could do status hearings.
So procedural stuff used to take you all over the place. Now you can spend your time representing your client.
Yes. So I think that's for the better.
Steve, let me ask you in regards to when it is a personal injury or work injury, you heard Steve talk about the contingent fee, okay, and the fact that there's no out-of-pocket cost. Some people may be nervous also because their regular doctor may not treat them if they find out, which is strange to me, but if they find out that it was a work injury or a personal injury, a car accident. Talk about how you handle those in regards to people not having to pay when they come in, you know, into your office. They don't have the same worries. In other words, they're not paying out of pocket.
Yeah, I mean, especially with personal injury cases, more often than not, you do have an allocation of funds, whether it's through the auto side of things or a claim through workman's comp. But the reassurance, even if they don't have those entitled benefits, is that we can default to the health insurance. And since we're in network with pretty much all the commercial insurances, that's usually not an issue. And let's just say, for example, which is pretty rare, but it happens, that we are either not in network with a specific carrier or they just don't have insurance. We have a relationship with a multitude of firms where we will take a letter of protection.
Letter of protection.
Where, you know, in the end, they won't have to have any concern or anxiety of forking over anything up front. It would just be all settled at the end.
Well, it's interesting, and that's why it does matter. I'm going to take a shot at this, but it matters that they have a quality attorney like John who is not a dabbler. We've had a lot of individuals, especially workers' comp and personal injury. I had an attorney in here not long ago. Never forget it. I couldn't forget it because it was only about 2 months ago. But she had somebody come in her office and that, you know, that person had gone to a neighborhood person. And that neighborhood person might have been great at Wilson Estates and maybe certain other things that are daily things. But, you know, the woman that the victim, the client said, if she was becoming a new client because it didn't work out with the old, am I going to have to pay out of my pocket for the specialist, right? You know, for you know, when it came to, you know, doing depositions, which meant that that client went to the wrong attorney. That you should not be dealing with somebody who's not an expert, very experienced at personal injury or workers' compensation. In your world, Steve, that matters, right? I mean, in other words, you know, you may be on the hook for a lot of services, and you know, it's got to be a comfort to know that they have a professional like John who's representing them, who at the same time, you know, would also help protect your interests as well, if it got that far.
Yeah, I mean, this is where, you know, establishing a good rapport with other providers, attorneys, specialists, having good communication, just being upfront and honest of what the circumstance is. Because really, that's, you know, in a situation where a patient is injured, you know, the first thing that we're thinking of is let's just get you better. Like that's first and foremost the priority.
In your world, John, how, and this may sound, you know, trivial, but how important is the medical, and you're dealing with a lot of people who are injured, and sometimes these cases don't, the insurance companies, from what they say, are in the business of accepting premiums and payments, not paying out settlements. So this could take a long time. This person might have emotional stress and all those things and decide not to go to therapy for 2 to 3 months. And I've heard attorneys say, well, you're not treating, you're clearly not hurt, and it's going to impact the case and your physicality. How important is medical, okay, and medical treatment and the credibility of the location to an injury victim?
Well, they're both obviously very credible and very important to the case. And it is true that the insurance companies will look at that case and say, well, if the person skipped treating, they always say that, oh, there's a gap in treatment, and you know that affects their analysis. Right. They have some sort of software that they use, and you know, that's, I think, an element that they would consider, you know, the gap in treatment. But obviously people are concerned about, you know, they're going to incur costs, et cetera. So you just have to comfort them that, you know, there are all sorts of considerations. But normally, if we work with a particular medical provider that knows how to deal with the system, you know, that usually makes it better for everyone.
Steve, talk about, you know, in that sense, compliance and, you know, the fact that if you are working with, why don't some doctors, okay, or providers, why don't they handle injury or work comp cases? And how important is it for that in those situations for the doctor to be able to stand behind the patient, do a deposition, reports, those things?
Number one, I mean, sometimes they don't know how to they don't want to ever get involved in litigation in the event that there's going to be testimony or something to that effect where their, you know, their records are going to be reviewed or they don't even feel comfortable preparing a report that addresses all the critical elements of a case. So they just don't want to get involved. They don't want to ever have to, you know, have to be deposed, which is something that somebody might have to do if they're involved in either an auto case, a premises case, or a workers' comp case. So right there, that's something. And, you know, if you just don't know what you're doing, I mean, they just maybe never got into it. And if they're not really comfortable with it, you know, they don't feel like getting involved.
Yeah, a lot of providers like to stay in their own lane, you know, which, you know, at this point, putting blinders on and just staying medical, clinical, but navigating the legal space can be, for many providers, a hassle that they just don't want to get involved with. There are a lot of medical practices, even hospitals, that just don't want to get involved.
And delay in payment, too.
And delay in payment.
That's an issue.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true. People... unfortunately, and understandably so, you know, all these practices do have bills that they have to pay and expenses, but you know, and that is the sad reality sometimes, is that there is a delay in payment, you know.
It happens. Better for the providers that, you know, are comfortable enough to, you know,
get through the initial
correct
phases of being, you know, doing this type of work.
Yeah. What did they do years ago, John? In other words, if it wasn't for medical providers that are willing to understand the situation, okay, by the way, you can't be very hard to find one if you're somebody who tried to do it on your own, okay? But what did people do 30 years ago when you first started out, for crying out loud? That, in other words, was there networks?
There's always been medical providers in my 30 years of experience that, you know, are willing to work with attorneys. I mean, it's been going back. I mean, the laws have changed about how to get paid and stuff like that. Like back in the day, they didn't have review of treatment and stuff like that. Now they can challenge treatment both in auto in terms of reasonableness and workers' comp. Also, in terms of workers' comp, they can control where you go now. It's been over the years more and more days.
But they have to meet some qualifications. You know, they have to meet standards, right? They have to post on the.
Of course, they have to do that. And if they don't do that, then the injured worker can still go where they want without consequence. I mean, even if they do have that, I typically like to have a provider that would still be willing to maybe look at them initially.
Second opinion, at least.
Yeah. And with the understanding that maybe you might not get paid for that one visit because it's within that time period. But it's, I think, beneficial to everybody kind of thing. Well, definitely the injured worker in the case.
How come, especially in a work injury, you know, an injured worker could go, so, you know, look, how many people do we know that have been working for the same company for so long that get injured, and now all of a sudden they're sent, the first thing they're doing is they're doing the wrong thing because they don't know any better, but they're asking their boss, where should I go? They send them to some clinic or whatever it's called, and they have no diagnostics. They don't, a lot until it's way too late. They're getting the diagnostic, maybe an x-ray and all these things that don't determine what the real situation is, and they find themselves floundering in a system that is not their friend until someday they walk into your office. How come they can't get those diagnostics and be treated fairly? Probably half the litigation would be unnecessary.
I'm not sure exactly. That's more for a medical provider. I mean, definitely legally, we want those diagnostics, but I mean, I'm sure they have their protocols about when it's appropriate. You know, maybe they have to wait a certain amount of time. There's probably insurance regulations associated with how long you have
to wait. I'm talking about the Concentra's, though. You can go there for 40 years and instead of getting a true MRI when you need one, they're looking at the X-ray and they're going, you're not hurt.
Well, that's true.
Definitely. You know, there could be some level of bias there.
Yeah.
Of course, if they're on a panel.
I'm not saying they always do it, but it happens more.
Hope that there is integrity and they take the Hippocratic Oath of doing no harm what's best.
I hear you there, but I mean, but there's.
But we have reality too.
I mean, the reality is, some of these.
They're getting paid by the insurance companies.
Occupational health doctors, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, you're right. There's probably integrity too, but they're not going to
push the envelope of doing that.
What are you doing, Steve, in that case? When you get somebody who comes in, who's been beat up in the system, and now you guys are a place of integrity, and you're, like you just said, your main objective is for them to get better, okay, but you also understand the situation they've just been through. How does that, I'm sure you've seen some egregious situations where you're going, oh my God. Go ahead, John.
You know what's one thing is if a person fails to mention all their areas of injury and they mention it the second time, they're out of luck a lot of times in these occupational injury environments,
Sometimes you don't know though that you're
It's true. I mean, especially if it's that day or even shortly thereafter.
Yeah. I mean, you'll see that a lot in these auto injuries where their injuries come maybe a week after, 2 weeks after because of delayed muscle onset soreness or certain injuries that are latent, and they appear a little later after the actual date of injury.
So we got about 4 minutes left. John, expectations for your clients. Now, what can they expect when they retain you as an attorney and the great representation you provide?
Well, basically an honesty, open communication. That's kind of who I am. I mean, I'm always going to take their call and call them back and explain what's going on and work with them and explain the process and hopefully they'll work with me and usually that open line of communication gets things done.
It sounds simple, but it's the biggest complaint clients, you know, like in other words, people have. You want exactly what you said. You want an open line of communication and honesty. Okay, and if you can get that and find, and that's why we get the opportunity to have the best attorneys in the world on this show, because you want people that, you know, I mean, literally speaking, have that, you know, that clients can expect that from. Steve, if you will, you know, what you guys do, expectations for clients and when working with legal professionals.
Well, for the client, of course, honesty is number one, but also education, just letting them know the landscape of what our intentions are, especially on that initial visit and then their subsequent plan of care, giving them just reasonable expectations of what you know, they're going to encounter with the services that we render, and give them the choices of what's available that we could provide for them. And then for the attorney, just letting them know that we are here to make sure that we have a good rapport with both the patient, your client, the mutual client, and your firm, whether it's the paralegal, yourself, keeping an open dialogue and making sure that we keep you updated on the progress or lack thereof, all the tests that are involved, and what the discharge plans are.
All right, listen, I mean, literally speaking, this has been the fastest hour, and we got 2 minutes left. John Pallante, if you would, contact information for yourself at the firm.
Well, you can look me up, PallanteLaw.com. I got a website. But my phone is, you could always call me. My cell is 215-518-9008. I take calls directly. But my work phone is 215-985-0976.
Pallante Law? Offices of John Pallante?
Yes.
How do you spell Pallante?
P-A-L-L-A-N-T-E.
Well, that's it. We're going to have a contest with that one. How many L's in Pallante? You know now. Steve-O, contact information.
Very
Reboot
simply,
Radio.
If you want to just visit our website, rebootiwc.com, and all the information for each location is laid out right there for you.
We had a great guest.
Yeah, fantastic, John. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks
great,
for having
great
me.
Discussions.
Great to have you back on, John. Always a pleasure. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the Reboot Radio Hour here on WWDB Talk 860. Shout out to TJ, our producer, John Pallante, our guest, and our host, Steve-O. On behalf of everybody on the broadcast, go Phillies!
Go
yes,
Phillies.
Sir.
And thanks
Let's
for listening.
It.